Good morning, I'm at Landmark at the Hastings Public Library on behalf of the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank. It's the 13th of October 2020 and talking to us is Joanna, U-H-L-I-R-O-V-A, and Rose Chapman about the Central Hawke's Bay Museum.
Thank you for coming on this wet day. It's a joy today to talk about something that, huge credit to these two ladies here, is everything you would want in a small provincial museum. It was beautifully curated. It is a beautiful little museum. So I have great joy in welcoming Jana Ulerova from Czechoslovakia, who has been curator for many years now, and Rose Chapman, who many of you know. She now is a Central Hawke's Bay resident, but she loves it. So I welcome both of you. Jana, first, over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for inviting us. It is my pleasure to be able to talk about the Central Hawke's Bay Museum. But first, I thought I will introduce myself a little bit and explain my role in the museum. So as you could hear, my name is Jana Ulerova. I've been curator and manager of Central Hawke's Bay Museum for almost 10 years. I came originally from the Czech Republic, not Czechoslovakia.
Sorry.
In 2004, and I spent 1 year traveling around New Zealand. I graduated with a master's degree in history of art and museology from Masaryk University at Brno in Czech Republic. Now I have two children, daughter Amalia, she's 15, and my son Fionn is 13. I live in a tiny house which is parked at the Tukituki River at Patangata. A little bit about my homeland. This is my hometown back in Czech Republic. It's a very traditional place with folklore still alive, nestled at the edge of hundreds of hectares of very old forest. This part of Czech Republic is called South Moravia and lies on the border with Austria and Slovakia. It's very similar to Hawke's Bay, with lots of vineyards, forests, and farms. They are the main features of the area, and these gave the village these unique folk traditions. This is the traditional costume, which shows all the richness of the area in the color, laces, and decoration. So it's very rich and colorful area. But the place also has lots of history. Not always the happiest. There have been many fights, attacks, and occupation since the early 6th century, as the village sits on the natural borders of the other countries, formed by two rivers. It is said that that's the reason why people who live there are tough, hard, and arrogant, but with big hearts. I feel very strong connection with this place, especially with the prehistoric people of Great Moravia, who lived in the area of my village from 9th to 10th century. There is an archaeological site from the time of Great Moravia in the Middle Forest, and today it's a museum, of course, with many artifacts found in the site, which are illustrating the life of Great Moravian nation. I guess that's where my passion for history has started, is this place, which is very close to my home. But generally, my home country, Czech Republic, is the historic and cultural center of Central Europe and has extremely rich history. Now, it is my great honor to be able to work at Central Hawke's Bay Museum. The museum is registered and corporate society with a committee of 10 members who represents the governance of the museum. We have 4 weekend staff and a group of very skilled and talented volunteers. We have about 5,000 visitors every year and receive a great support from Central Hawke's Bay District Council in a form of an annual grant and other assistance. Our mission statement is to provide an authentic, hands-on educational experience with a focus on the historical, cultural, and natural evidence of Central Hawke's Bay. A little bit about the history. The museum began with a group of enthusiastic volunteers in 1986 with the historic building of the Bank of New Zealand, which was given to the public by the District Council. The first honorary curator, Sam McClary, opened the museum to the public in 1988, so it's a pretty young museum. George McGregor, appointed curator in 1999, began the visual transformation of the museum displays. Here with the local artist Jen Gosling, they created an authentic atmosphere, constructing shopfront digital displays, painting the big mural in the foyer, and refurbishing part of the bank building into a replica of Colonial Cottage. In 2000, the construction of the exhibition hall began to house the museum's largest artifact, which is the Elstor Waka, which is made from a single totalog more than 100 years ago, and it's on loan from the Wilder family. The hall was officially opened by the Governor General in January 2001. 3 years later, the hall was renamed in honor of George McGregor. In 2016, the hall was upgraded with insulation, LED lights, and temperature control system. So that's the current image. Right from the beginning of the museum, the aim was not only to collect artifacts, but also to build an archive with documents relating to Central Hawke's Bay. And that was big passion of curator Roisin Parker, who set up sort of this routine of helping with research and genealogy. But it will be Rose talking a little bit more about the museum archive. I'm talking more about the museum. So our very authentic displays enable a visitor to take a step back into the everyday of early settlers. The museum houses an extensive collection of local and national treasures, including military, Tanga Maori, and technology. This should be a replica of our colonial cottage with dining room, kitchen, bedroom, and nursery, which is all set up of the 1890s era. And some decorations came from the original house, which was built in 1893 for James and Mary Bibby. Over the years, the museum has become a cultural facility for Central Hawke's Bay, with its many different exhibitions, ranging from local history. This was an exhibition about Peter Pan ice cream factory, based in Waipukurau. This was World War I exhibition, showcasing our local soldiers who originated from Central Hawke's Bay. We do have art exhibitions, again, mainly focusing on local artists. That's the recent lockdown exhibition. But also we had a major exhibition about local Maori tanga in 2018. And that was our waka in the center of the display. We also regularly host school visits and other group visits, so we have many local schools coming to learn about the local history. We provide interactive hands-on exhibitions and displays so that children can learn in different ways, not just through reading. And also we offer openings of new exhibitions with drinks and nibbles for the public to come and catch up and socialize. One more service we do, the museum volunteers take turns in visiting Hawke's Bay rest homes with suitcases packed with old treasures, which become very popular. We have about probably 30 visits every year in different rest homes. It's big demand. As you could notice, the museum has recently changed its name, and it's not Central Hawke's Bay Settlers Museum, but we are now called only Central Hawke's Bay Museum, to be more inclusive of other cultures and different periods in New Zealand history as well. So next time you are passing or you are going to Wellington, please stop in Waipawa. We are open every day from 10 to 4. And although we charge admission fee, it's not bad, it's only $5. Thank you very much. Now, Roseville.
Good morning, everybody. My part in our talk today concerns the archival records held at Central Hawke's Bay Museum. All our archival material is stored in the old bank vault, which is fire and flood proof, although fortunately it's never been tested with either, but it is somewhat overcrowded. All our documents, books, photographs, and even firearms have accumulated over the past 30 years in the vault, with the only real catalogue being in Jana's head. But 5 years ago, I started as a volunteer with a background in libraries and began to enter all these items onto our past perfect digital database. This is a work in progress, a long, slow job. none of our material is accessible online publicly yet, but we hope eventually to make our records available. At present, it is necessary to make an inquiry in person or to send a letter or an email with as much detail as possible about what you want. We actually got a handwritten paper letter from Hunterville not so long ago, but usually people ring up or send an email. This is the uncatalogued part of the vault. As you can see, we need some new boxes, and none of the things on this side of the room are actually on our database yet. This side, I've been past this side, so all the books have been catalogued in subject order, and the boxes also are new archival boxes. These documentary paper archives concern local businesses, organisations, events, schools, churches, farms and stations, and localities. The majority of these relate to Waipawa because, difficult as it may seem nowadays, Waipawa was once a very significant inland town, established in 1860, 14 years before Hastings was on the map. There were three large banks, three big two-story hotels, a brewery, railway station, and many shops. However, we also have material relating to Waipukanol and the townships and localities of CHB. Maps. We have about 200 maps, and are very fortunate that at some stage a purpose-built oak map cabinet was donated to us, so that's a perfect place to keep maps flat. Almost all our maps have been scanned as JPEGs and can be sent to people by email for a small charge. Waipawa County map here, you see, originally stretched all the way from Pātongata to Tekapo. It was a very large county bordering on Hawke's Bay. This map is one of many sale plans we have that were drawn up at a time when the big station estates were being broken up for closer settlement or for soldier settlements after World War I. So these plans are always drawn up and a sale was held. So we've got quite a lot of these. We hold about 500 historic photos donated to us by people over the years, and many have been digitised to files of 2 to 3 megabytes. They include individuals, sports teams, schools, buildings, and are stored in archival quality containers. A few examples of our early photos. You can see the BNC building, which later became the museum, and right next to it, the Empire Hotel was a massive two-story building. It stretched all the way from the museum, which of course is still in its original location, right down past the bottle store, the garage, and it had pleasure gardens at the back where the guests could walk. It's impossible to believe nowadays how big and important Waipawa was in the time, mainly before the First World War. This is another great photo. Look, here's the original bridge. The new bridge, of course, is at the end of High Street here. But that's the original bridge. And Rua Taniwha Street here was the main street with many shops, important buildings, big houses. And Kenilworth Street here was the municipal theatre, which was renovated in more recent times, but still the same building, and it was the council chambers. Here's the original school, now just an empty lot. Then we come back down here, and this is the High Street of today that we know. And here's the museum, and here's the Empire Tower. You can see it was unfortunately, like so many wooden colonial buildings, it burned down spectacularly in 1961. It was a really wet day when our town clock was open, but it's such a lovely feature of Waipawa. Probably our most famous photographs in the collection would be those of the elephants from Worth Circus towing a stranded traction engine from the river in 1909. Isn't that a great picture? And we also have the late Alistair Jones collection of photographs of Waipukanoa and district, including sports teams and the hospital. We have a huge collection of photographs from the hospital. After Waipukanoa Hospital closed, their paper archives and many objects too came to the museum. We also get a lot of requests for people interested in their family history. We're usually able to help people, although of course cataloguing in greater depth is needed. Another work in progress. Many people simply send us an email or a letter or ring up and say, my grandfather John Smith worked in CHB in the 1800s. Have you got any pictures of him? Well, we need a lot more details than that. And of course, it was mainly the people who owned land or businesses who were recorded, not so much the ordinary everyday workers. So when people contact us, we like them to give as much detail as possible to begin the search, as most of the searching is done by volunteers and it all takes time. Here's a couple of great family history pictures. The Harding family at Mount Vernon Station, going off in their lovely new motor cars. Some people will know what cars those are. And I love this one. This was a picnic at the Amerson family homestead on New Year's Day, I think 1911, I'm not too sure that date actually. And that's just a stage box in that, but isn't it perfect? A lot of well-known Waipawa lands in that picture. So, one last thing, newspapers. At the museum we have a sequence of microfilms and an antiquated reader which has films of the Waipukarau Press from 1906 to 1973, and we do have some copies of the Waipawa Mail. It's hoped that our full sequence of the mail, now held at MTG, will soon be digitised to appear on the National Library's website, Papers Past. But soon has so far been about 3 years, so who knows, hopefully it will turn up. So that's all from me. So if anybody has any questions for Yana or myself, please just ask.
Got one, Rose. One of our previous farming families talked about the massive holding stations you had for the stock there. It was Waipawa. And what happened with all that land?
Well, I think I'm right in saying that the railway, of course, was very significant. It came through Waipawa and reached Hastings in 1874, and huge numbers of sheep and wool were loaded on at Waipawa station. And there were big holding pens there for thousands and thousands of sheep. But at some stage, the railways department, I suppose, wanted to expand those pens, and whoever owned the land said no. So they went to Waipukarau. Waipukarau is now, of course, a much bigger town than we are, but we like Waipawa. So that's what happened there.
It was funny talking to Jan and Rose because they just brought up that there's still that old parochial thing between Waipawa and Waipark, very similar to another one we won't name.
That rivalry between Waipukarau and Waipawa all started because of a Kitsik courthouse. The Kitsik courthouse was due to be delivered by a bullock dray, I presume, or perhaps horse dray, to Waipukarau, but the person bringing it from Napier didn't quite know where Waipukarau was, so he offloaded it into a paddock beside the road, halfway between the two towns. And Waipawa was quick enough to grab it. So although the only courthouse now is in Waipukarau, it was in Waipawa for a long time. So that's where our rivalry started.
And the city council is still Waipawa, isn't it?
No. Oh, no, no, I see what you mean. The building is built in Regional Council, above in Waipawa. Yes.
I visited St. Peter's Church, the cemetery there, and a nice gentleman told us the story about the influenza, and there were wooden plaques or crosses, but it's now gone. Does the church have a list of all those people buried in the graveyard, or... Do you
are they not on a plaque in the graveyard?
No, it only goes to 1906.
Really?
Nothing about the influenza.
Council. William Squires might be able to help you. It must be the council because I don't think we do.
Do you have a connection with the churches in Waipawa who want to share their records with you?
Not really. We do have some church records. But they're mainly their small publications, like when they have a centenary or something like that. We don't have any of the original stuff, do we? In fact, that's perhaps something we should look into and gather a bit more into our archive.
I like the headstones there.
But people often don't realise, how big Waipawa is, and also how beautiful, the many beautiful old buildings. So when you come through Waipawa a little bit early,
giving yourself time to come to the museum. Also take time to drive up around the old streets, and you'll see many beautiful buildings, a lot of which have been bought by incomers, if I can call them that, who do them up most beautifully, new paint and get beautiful gardens. So we're looking very spick and span these days. Well, it seems CHB is the place to be.
Yeah, you come quite trendy, actually.
Oh, I think we have.
Helen.
This is a question that other people will want to know, I'm sure. Rose, if you have something in your family that you wouldn't mind sharing with the museum for a little while, so other people can appreciate it, what's the procedure with that?
Jan is the best one to answer that.
Okay, so do you mean by that family artifacts or family documentation or...? Okay, so currently we don't accept any loans because previously people just put on loan everything. They didn't have a space to store at home, so we become just like a storage place. And then after they find a new place, they just came and said, oh, we want it back now. And then we ended up with not having the artifacts. So we don't accept loans anymore. So anything you want to donate, it has to be donation, and we will transfer the ownership of the artifacts or the documentation to the museum. So that's the new policy, unless it's something very exceptional or for a short term, but definitely not for long term. But what we do is when a family decided to donate family collection to the museum, that it's always accessible for all members of the family. We write special policy who has the access. So if anyone comes, we always sort of show it and people can see it, or if we use it for exhibition, because it can not always be on permanent display. So that's the new policy.
That's good, which does actually bind in with the Knowledge Bank, who put up with the same problem. Mm. And I wonder if Grant, if you just explain what happens when things are suggested to go to the Knowledge Bank, because you have an assessment service.
This is Grant Anson, everyone, who does a lot of work at the Knowledge Bank.
We do assess everything we get, and we do have sometimes a similar problem where people will turn up with a huge amount of stuff, but we go through it and respectfully hand back what we don't want to digitise. And once we digitise, and that's a fancy word for scanning and typing up, we hand it back. We do not hold on to anything. We just, as you know, the quality of storage and storage is impossible, but we still encourage people to bring stuff in, because we occasionally get some treasures that we cannot believe. We have a process of putting them online and sharing them with everybody.
It's not a question, it's just a sort of response. You're saying people drive past this place. I've driven past it for about 16 years. I decided to go and have a look at it one day, and out the foyer in the front where the machinery was, I remember it quite well, and I read about the history of it. It was made in White Baccarat, and it was used on the swamp of Te Ati. By, and there's a photograph inside that museum of 18 bullocks pulling a set of hammers, which is staggering. You know, that could have gone to the scrapyard, one of the scrap drives during the war or anything, but we've got quite a lot of interesting stuff.
I must admit that, of course, we had more large artifacts outside as well as at the back, because, yeah, not enough space. And also, we are not anymore just a place for collecting old artifacts. We are sort of changing dynamic or our vision to be working more with the local community. So we provide space for the community so they can be involved with our museum. So it's not just depositorium for old stuff anymore. We're still, of course, looking after the history, and that's the main focus of the museum, is to look after our local history. But we are providing now more space to be open with the community and work with the community, which also, it's great to build a relationship, because now we are still getting donations. People want to be part of it. They want to share their family history with us. They really are feeling that they want to be part of what we do. So that's why we don't have that many large artifacts anymore. But also, of course, they need lots of care, which it's difficult because we are not that, you know, we don't have that great funds to operate and do restorations.
Yeah, and I'd love for you to expand on how you went into the aged care homes. How did all that come about?
I'm trying to remember how it all started. I think I just went to some conference and I really liked the idea, because especially in Central Hawke's Bay, the geographical situation of the area doesn't allow everyone to come to see the museum. And I think the original idea from my point of view was for schools, because I wanted the schools to be able to access the historical documents or the historical artifacts. So I thought all these suitcases will be perfect way how to go to the individual local small schools in the country to at least, you know, share some of the local history. But somehow it actually turned that we, instead of the school, start to go to the rest homes. And of course the residents of the rest homes, because it's triggering their memories and they can share the memories with, you know, everybody else, and they remember the objects and they can handle it, and they don't need to travel because they're usually has physical disabilities and stuff like that. So it became really, really popular, and now we work with probably about 6 rest homes around Hawke's Bay, and we go there regularly. And our main volunteer, Hazel, she changed the suitcase. She packs it with different objects depending on the audience, what they, you know, would like to see and what they are interested in. And it's been really, really popular. And we don't charge, we just accept donations for it. So yeah, the money is always a problem, but we are trying as much as possible. I don't want to say use our volunteers, but we do use our volunteers a lot, because it enables the museum to expand, to do all these different activities we do. Otherwise, we would not be able to do much without volunteers, of course, yeah.
I think it's a great idea, because we just see this marginalisation in society getting more and more extreme, and yet there you are, taking the memories back, which they love, don't they? Yeah. That is fantastic.
Anna, are you on your payroll?
Yes, I am.
It's a very small payroll thank you to both of you on behalf of Landmarks. We're so grateful of the effort you've taken, both of you. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you very much.